Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello. This is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, Council School Board Elections by Sam Karras, Sam at BigBendSentinel.com, by Mary Cantrell, M-K-C-A-N-T-R-E-L-L at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. The candidate filing period for the May 4th general election is now open, with a filing deadline of 5 p.m. Friday, February 16th. Early voting runs from April 22nd to April 30th, 2024. Voters will decide on Presidio and Marfa City Council candidates, as well as Marfa ISD School Board candidates, and any ballot measures. The general election will precede the primary runoff election, which will contain county and state seats. That takes place May 28th. In order to qualify to run in the general election, candidates must have resided in the respective city where the office is held for at least 6 months, must be 18 years of age or older, be a U.S. citizen, and must not have been convicted of a felony. A full list of qualifications can be found on the Secretary of State's website. Presidio City Council. 3 seats will be up for grabs this spring in Presidio. Steve Nicky Alvarez, Joe Andy Mendoza, and John Rosso. The terms of fellow council members Arian Velasquez Ornelas and Nancy Arevalo will expire next year. Those who want to file for a spot on City Council or want more information can visit City Hall, 507 West O'Reilly Street. Application materials are also available online at https://presidiotx.us/?PAGE_ID=63. At press time, City Secretary Brenda Ornelas said that no one had filed to run yet. Alvarez and Mendoza said they plan to run again. Rosso did not respond to a request for comment. Marfa City Council. The terms of City Council members Mark Cash, Mark Morrison, and Eddie Payares will be up for election this coming May. Both Cash and Payares served 2-year terms, while Morrison, who was filling in for the unexpired term of ex-council member Jason Ballman, served a 1-year term. As of press time, both Cash and Morrison had filed for re-election to serve full 2-year terms. Payares did not respond to requests for comment by press time regarding whether or not he intends to file for another term. City Secretary Kelly Perez said he picked up an application and expressed interest in running. Council members are at large, meaning they do not fill a specific seat, convene twice a month, and are paid $50 per meeting. Interested parties are encouraged to pick up applications in person at City Hall, 113 South Highland Avenue. Applications are also available in both English and Spanish online at https://cityofmarfa.com/government/page/elections. To submit applications, individuals may file in person at City Hall, mail their applications to City Hall at Post Office Box 787, Marfa, Texas, 79843, or email them to secretary@cityofmarfa.com. Marfa School Board. The terms of school board members, Yolanda Morales, place 3, Renee Gonzalez, place 4, and Stella Fuentes, place 1, will be up for election this May. Both Morales and Gonzalez served 3-year terms, while Fuentes, who was filling in for the unexpired term of former board member Krista Marquez, served a 1-year term. Fuentes told the Big Bend Sentinel she intends to file for re-election. I look forward to continuing to collaborate with my fellow board trustees and interim superintendent on making MISD the best environment for our students and staff, she said. Morales and Gonzalez did not respond to requests for comment on whether they intend to file for re-election. School board members convene once a month and are volunteers. Interested candidates may visit the Marfa ISD Administration Office, located at 400 West Lincoln, to pick up a packet from the superintendent's secretary, Griselda Hinojos. As of press time, Hinojos received no applications for the open school board positions. Staff photo by Maisie Crow. Molly Durkin, Jacqueline Del Omo, and Mo Eldridge light candles at the start of the Let Gaza Live vigil near the steps of the Presidio County Courthouse Saturday evening, where attendees shared poetry and experiences in recognition of the thousands of Palestinian deaths in war-torn Gaza. Jeff Davis County, Fort Davis Water Supply Corporation, and Fort Davis ISD settle years-long property dispute. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Jeff Davis County. A 2019 lawsuit brought against Jeff Davis County and the Fort Davis Water Supply Corporation by Fort Davis ISD over the ownership of Urquhart Avenue and extraction and storage of groundwater on the property settled out of court in January, marking the end of a lengthy legal battle that sowed division among public officials. "We are very glad it's over," said County Judge Curtis Evans. "I want the animosity to be behind us so we can return to a community that always worked together for the betterment of Jeff Davis County." The multifaceted settlement agreement involves a $195,000 payout to the school district, multiple new easements, the dismissal of the lawsuit, and the recognition of the Fort Davis Water Supply Corporation, FDWSC, a nonprofit providing water and sewer services to the town of Fort Davis, as the owner of the property and associated utilities. In a joint statement agreed upon by all parties, they wrote that they worked tirelessly to reach a resolution that meets the needs of all involved, particularly the community, and are satisfied with the outcome and are looking forward to moving on from this dispute. The resolution terms include payments to Fort Davis ISD and its corresponding commitment to execute the necessary real estate documents to quiet title to the properties involved and to ensure continued availability of water resources to the public, the joint statement read. Superintendent Graydon Hicks, who said the school board was forced to file the lawsuit in 2019 after no progress finding a solution had been made, said he was relieved to see the dispute he tirelessly worked on finally settled, and the school board was ready to move on. "Yes, all of us are glad that it's over 100%, said Hicks. "Whether I'm satisfied or not is irrelevant. The school board is satisfied." School board president James Weaver, who has served on the board for the past 4 years and seen the protracted legal battle play out, said throughout the process the school board's goal was to ensure they were in compliance with the law, and now that the rightful owner of the property is decided upon, they were free to focus on other pressing matters. It's been a long, long ordeal, and we're just ready to move on down the road and focus on our kids and staff and other things and get our mind off a lawsuit, Weaver said. I don't know that anybody wins in a small town when you have a lawsuit, he added. But at the end of the day, we feel like we did what was right, and we did everything we could do to get this resolved. General Manager of the FDWSC, Janet Adams, declined to comment on the settlement outside of the joint statement. West Urquhart Avenue. The lawsuit brought into question the ownership of West Urquhart Avenue, a 70 by 280-foot portion of the road located southwest of the district's football field that was never heavily trafficked, according to court documents, and referred to in the past as Beer Can Alley. Today, the site holds significant water infrastructure, 3 water storage tanks, a generator, and a water well, all operated by the FDWSC. The school district has argued that the Water Supply Corporation was unlawfully granted access by the county to install the water infrastructure in 2006, when it only held a right-of-way easement for roadway purposes. The area is part of a subdivision originally platted in 1888, one that eventually became home to the school district. In 2003, the district purchased land adjacent to Urquhart, therefore giving the district partial ownership of the road, according to legal documents. The district brought the suit against the two entities in 2019 to establish its lawful ownership of the real property, including all improvements, or obtain just compensation for the unlawful, uncompensated taking of its property, including natural resources, by the county and the FDWSC through the unlawful acts of their officials, according to court documents. The monetary damages the district sought were between $200,000 and $1 million. A letter written by then-County Attorney Teresa Todd, included in court documents, sheds light on a popular opinion as to why the district brought forth the lawsuit in the first place. She states the dispute began between the FDWSC and the district over its water rates and spread to include other issues, including the water infrastructure on Urquhart Avenue. She argued the property dispute was the cash-strapped district's way of trying to bring in additional revenue. There were no issues with the use of a portion of Urquhart Avenue for water infrastructure until the summer of 2019, when a shortage of funds led to a new ISD philosophy focused less on community cooperation and more on monetization of school district resources, Todd wrote. Hicks, who has continuously voiced concerns that Fort Davis ISD is facing financial ruin at the hands of the state, and Weaver, denied the notion that the lawsuit was motivated by money. In the end, the district will mostly cover its attorney fees with the settlement payout. We just wanted it all done legally and buttoned up and done correctly, said Weaver. We wanted to do our due diligence to make sure that happened, and it had nothing to do with generating funds. The district argued that it cannot legally give the county and FDWSC the land because, as a public school district, it cannot give away taxpayer property. The district does want the citizens of Fort Davis to benefit from the well, unlawfully drilled on property owned by the district, that it holds in trust for the state of Texas, court documents state. But the district cannot simply give away public property interests. The county and FDWSC initially denied the school district's claims and asserted that Urquhart was, unlike other surrounding roads, never formally closed and vacated, therefore remained the property of the county and theirs to donate to the FDWSC. Hicks said there were multiple attempts to settle the property dispute over the years, But the county and the water company thought the school district should just shut up and be quiet and let them do what they wanted. According to Judge Evans, representatives from the FDWSC approached county commissioners around 2006 because they were receiving warning letters from the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality that they did not have adequate water storage compared to the number of customers they had. Evans said the Water Supply Corporation wanted to keep the water affordable for customers and asked for the county's help locating property where they could place a storage tank. Urquhart Avenue was chosen because it was essentially abandoned, he said, and located close to an existing Water Supply Corporation well, one that existed due to past partnerships with the school district. He said the motive of all the officials involved at the time, including district administrators, was to keep the town's water affordable. The paperwork required to close the street, making it no longer publicly accessible or required to be maintained by the county, was not completed properly at that time, Evans said. The county officially closed West Urquhart as a county right-of-way this past December to right the situation. The settlement agreement. In addition to the road closure and determination that the land and water infrastructure belonged to the FDWSC, the County and Water Supply Corporation will each pay $97,500 to the school district, a total of $195,000, which will cover the majority of the attorney fees the district has incurred over the duration of the lawsuit, $198,000, according to Hicks. The county budgeted for the settlement payment this fiscal year, according to Evans, and will be paying for the sum with ad valorem tax revenue. Evans said the settlement payment was one of the reasons the county attempted to increase taxes this year. The county's insurance through the Texas Association of Counties is paying for their legal fees. Evans said it is unclear at this time how that claim may impact the county's insurance rates. The county also agreed to provide the school district with tax collection services for free, a $25,000 annual value for 4 years. It's a $100,000 revenue loss for the county and a $100,000 revenue gain for the district. Hicks said the district intends to use the additional funds on building maintenance, vehicles, salaries, stipends, and UIL fees. As a part of the settlement, the FDWSC agreed to apply the same water and sewer rates to the school district as it does to the county for the next 10 years beginning January 2024. Evans denied that the county has ever received special water rates and said it is subject to increases like every other customer. General Manager of the FDWSC, Adams, declined to comment on whether the $97,500 settlement payment it has to make to the district will cause customer water rates to increase. Weaver said the settlement agreement may not be exactly what everyone wanted, but they were terms all the parties could live with, and it was time to finally move on as a community. Fort Davis is such a small place and a tight-knit community, Weaver said. I go to church with all these people, and I'm good friends with all these people that are in this lawsuit, so it's just good to have it behind us.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm recording the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, February 1st, 2024. City rejects awning proposal, approves voluntary annexation. The City Council on January 22nd decided to reject a proposal for a shade awning at the Hodges Pavilion adjacent to the Convention Center. The city received a bid from Triple R Welding and from LT Construction. I recommend that all proposals submitted for the new construction of a shade awning at the Hodges Pavilion be rejected, said City Manager Rodriguez. The proposals do not include the breakdown of costs, such as labor and materials, which would allow better comparison of the proposals. Rodriguez added that with the large difference in the proposals, it would have been beneficial for the city to have that breakdown. What we're going to do is possibly go back out for bids. The council approved a lease agreement between Xerox and the City of Fort Stockton for a copier for the Recreation Department, approved a pay application totaling $83,000 for work performed by AG Oilfield Services for excavation and removal, as well as the change order for clearing of the right-of-way of removal of 13,800 feet of pipeline. The City Council authorized in the initiation for a 32-acre tract of land being part of Block 29 of the F.J. Ellison First Edition to be zoned as a commercial district for the procurement of utility services, as requested by property owner Texas New Mexico Power Company. The location is off Ellison Road north of the Animal Medical Clinic to Dyke Street, east to just west of Fort Focused Care Nursing Home. City Manager Rodriguez said the city staff met with TNMP about the project regarding water, sewer, and gas, and said the project is doable. The council initiated the voluntary annexation process for a tract of land zoned as a commercial district for the procurement of utility services, as requested by property owner Duff Real Estate. The tract is located off the Monahans Highway just south of Flying J and north of Fort Stockton Welding. Everything pretty much around it is inside city limits. A tire mart is expected to be constructed at that location. School Board, here's Fort Stockton Educational Foundation update. The Educational Foundation is kicking into high gear, recently holding its third meeting. At that meeting, we made major progress, said Superintendent Zamora. We've actually looked at an investment group, and we believe that sometime here, probably in the next 2 weeks, we're going to be looking at calling a special board meeting to give the school board an opportunity to transfer some of the funds in part that are coming from the virtual school proceeds to this foundation that's going to scholarship those seniors that meet the criteria. We believe that the initial investment is going to be right around $3 million, and if we get lucky and it's invested properly, at a minimum, it's going to give us 5 or 6 years of scholarships for our kids to meet that criteria. So that is something that is going to really, and the scholarship amount is set at $5,000, and it is available to every senior who meets the criteria, which will be released soon. The foundation is reviewing the investment contract and will call a special board meeting to move that money. Progress is being made, and that's going to be a tangible benefit for our kids. The district got good news during its audit for the year ending August 31st from Eckert and Company. Zamora said there were two highlights from the audit. One, that there were no findings, so the auditors did not find anything that was to be looked at as a mispractice or something that was an accident. And two, the district added $5 million or 9% net position to the district. That is an increase. That is money that is also tangible assets like school buses, Zamora said. In addition to that, the district added $1,500,000 or 5% compared to the prior year to the fund balance, putting the district's fund balance at $35 million. Zamora added that the district added to the fund balance despite all things the district is doing. That is what builds our interest, and this is what ensures that the district is secure. The board approved an interlocal agreement with Pecos County for work to be performed between the district and the county. This is something that allows for us and the county to work together for different jobs and stipulates what is available for us to do and the conditions. School Board discusses Alamo Playground. The school district has created a plan for campus improvements across the district, part of which includes playground improvements at the campuses such as Apache and Alamo Elementaries. But the district has hit a snag at Alamo. The district selected a group of turf the campuses, and they've been working on improvements at Apache, but we encountered an issue with Alamo. The reason for that is there are pieces of playground equipment in the form of swings and a couple of other pieces of equipment that are not contained in the original perimeter that was set, Zamora said. The area in question is between the gym and the library. The choice facing the school board was, do they remove the swings and other pieces of equipment, or do they expand the overall footprint of the turf? Originally, the plan was for 2,400 square feet of turf, but keeping the swings and other playground equipment expands the footprint to 9,300 square feet. Zamora asked Alamo Principal Karina Pacheco what she wanted and learned that some of the swings are getting a little dated, who also said the representatives with the turf company would work with the district if they wanted to replace those swings before pouring concrete and adding turf. So a decision's been made. The additional amount is actually lowers the amount per square foot because it is so much more than the original. But it's an additional $76,000 to do that additional portion of turf, which would cover all of that area. The additional cost is bondable. I was in agreement with extending it, Pacheco told the board. Our students really need that playground equipment, and I would hate to lose a portion of it. Board member Kay Griffith said she knows the kids love the swings and stay on them the entire recess time. I would be against getting rid of swings because they need that. After more discussion about swings, the board ultimately voted to expand the turf in order to keep the swings and the other equipment. The board approved the school district revised special education legal framework, working with school attorneys Walsh Gallegos. The 200-page document needed to be updated before the end of January to get ready for the district audit. The board approved additional materials allotment committees for each campus. They are comprised of administrators, some teachers, and a group of individuals who will review said items. The following individuals have been nominated to represent their campus and serve on the IMA committee. For Stockton High School, Kenneth Vogel, Luane Porter, Tatiana Vidal, Marcus Mendoza, and Victor Garcia. Middle School, Sammy Solis, Gianna Martinez, Tim Carter. Intermediate School, Julian Castillo, Janelle George, Raquel Mishnick, Bethany Rivers, Rebecca Huffman. Alamo Elementary, Crystal Payne, Karina Pacheco, Nikki Porras, Michelle Natera. Apache Elementary, Juan Saldana, Noemi Navarrete, Cheyenne Hall, and Lamar Johnson. The board voted to approve the 400-page Texas Association of School Boards policy update, which the district must do to stay in compliance. It's something that we do in order to stay in compliance, and TASB is a trusted source when it comes to this. They have the attorneys on hand, Zamora said. The board went into executive session to discuss Zamora's contract. The board approved personnel changes, including two teachers at Apache, a new PE teacher coach at the middle school, hired Sergio Guardiola as the new assistant principal at the middle school, two new teachers at the middle school, and one culinary arts teacher at the high school. The board also had seven resignations and four transfers from one campus to another. Sorrel State University receives grant for scholarships from Permian Basin Area Foundation. SRSU and Alpine received approval for a grant for $200,000 from the Permian Basin Area Foundation, providing seed funding for the new Presidential Plus Scholarship Program for area high school students. The initial grant will be funded this February, and up to $100,000 will be matched dollar for dollar with donations received by the end of September 2025 for a possible total of $400,000. SRSU applied for the grant in October to help fund the Presidential Plus Scholarship, a full ride including tuition, fees, housing, and meals. The program will provide support to high-performing high school seniors from school districts in Alpine, Buena Vista, Crane, Fort Davis, Fort Stockton, Grand Falls, Royalty, Marathon, Marfa, Monahans, Wickett, Pyote, Pecos, Barstow, Toya, Presidio, Sanderson, Sierra Blanca, Terlingua, Valentine, and Van Horn. The scholarship program will be the first of its kind at Sol Ross, offering our local students a way to attain their bachelor's degree with the security of their home and families just a few miles down the road. This money will provide a full scholarship for 10 to 15 students a year. That's a life-changing impact for a lot of families and futures. Recipients will be nominated by the district superintendent or high school principal and must meet the following qualifications: regularly admitted student, enrolled in a bachelor's degree program, Texas resident at the time of admission, have completed the FAFSA and be awarded 100% Pell, enrolled in at least 15 hours per semester, graduate in the top 25% of high school class. The scholarship will be annually renewable based on minimum 3.0 cumulative GPA, meet financial aid and related satisfactory academic progress requirement, and remain enrolled in good standing. Permian Basin Area Foundation is pleased to support Sol Ross. We hope the presidential scholarship will help attract and retain students to the campus and that the matching dollars will inspire new donors to support the university. Museum of the Big Bend nominated for USA Today's 10 Best Travel Award. The Museum of the Big Bend at Sol Ross University has been nominated in USA Today's 2024 10 Best Reader's Choice Travel Awards. An expert panel selected Museum of the Big Bend as a contender for Best Small Town Museum, a new category, according to a press release. The contest allows 4 weeks to vote for the museum of your choice at 10best.com/awards/travel. You can vote once a day for the run of the contest by visiting SRSU and Museum of the Big Bend Facebook and Instagram pages, or by going directly to the link above. Voting ends Monday, February 12th, and winners will be announced on the 10 best on Friday, February 23rd. The museum has previously received a Top Western Museum Award from True West magazine. SRSU Education Department hosting National Read Aloud on February 7th. The Sol Ross State University Department of Education will participate in the National Read Aloud celebration on February 7th at the Espino Conference Center on the second floor of the Morgan University Center. National Read Aloud was created by Lit World in 2010 and is organized annually in 173 countries. Local families with pre-kindergarten through fourth grade students are invited to participate and will be asked to register for the event through their school. The featured book for the event, I Remember, Poems and Pictures of Heritage, includes poetry by Guadalupe Garcia McCall, author and SRU graduate. Pizza will be served beginning at 6 p.m. and McCall will begin the program by sharing her poetry. Then honored readers, including Mary Beth Garrett from Alpine, Mayor Catherine Eves, SRSU First Lady Lupita Hernandez, Dr. Velasco, Dr. Whisney, Dr. Rodriguez, Dr. Carpenter, Dr. Miller-Ray, Professor Brett Scott, and Lobo football players will read a variety of stories in small reading groups. Each participating student will be given a bookmark to use for a prize as they can receive by visiting Alpine Public Library. The event is underwritten by a $2,000 grant from Humanities Texas and by a $1,000 donation from West Texas National Bank in Alpine. Alpine's Front Street Books provided a discount on materials used for the event. Dear Editor, a deadly sin, I've noticed Texas state flag posters displayed with "Proud Democrat" printed on them. I couldn't help but wonder what made these Democrats so proud. Might it be an elimination of U.S. energy independence? What about the selling of U.S. strategic oil supply to the CCP? Could it be the uninhibited printing of money that caused record inflation? I've searched elsewhere in case these harmful policies weren't reasons for their deadly sin of pride. More than 1,000 babies were killed daily by the Democrat-ran Planned Parenthood, while child castrations and mastectomies are performed under pretense of sex changes. Joseph Mengele would have been proud. Democrat men pretend to be women while acting out in degrading female stereotypes, as Democrats show them more respect than real women, and Democrat guys pretend to be gals in sports, often defeating and sometimes injuring females. Are they proud of those actions? There's Democrat diversity, equity, and inclusion that's divisive, exclusive, and inequitable. And don't forget the Democrat created open U.S. borders. Are they proud of those harmful agendas? There's plenty more, but I've only got so much space here. These posters displaying Democrats strike me as folks who would use the phrase "proud as a rooster," not caring that roosters run their fathers off, have relations with their mothers and daughters, and scratch around in their own crap all day long. Signed, James R. LeBlanc, Fort Davis. Dear Editor, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were executed in 1953 for spying, for violating our national security. I believe Biden's open-door policy is much worse. Some 10 to 20 million illegals from 170 countries have poured into our country the last 3 years. Fentanyl is killing 100,000 young people each year. These millions of illegals are denied work permits. Therefore, our taxpayers must pay their food, housing, health care, and education. This is not sustainable. We are going broke. Thousands of criminals and mental patients have entered our country. Hundreds of terrorists have been caught at our borders, and many are gotaways. The USA is going to hit, and hit hard. Biden has violated our national security. Signed, George Pitts, Fort Stockton.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, January 25th. Jury acquits King on debit card abuse charges. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A former Subway employee who was accused of making fraudulent transactions with a customer's debit card in October 2021 has been found not guilty by a Ward County jury. Diana Jean King, age 40, appeared in the 143rd Judicial Court on January 11th, and both parties announced ready for trial. A jury was selected, impaneled, and sworn. The indictment was read, stating King did knowingly obtain a debit card with knowledge the card had not been issued to King and was not used with consent of cardholder Rebecca Marquez. King pled not guilty. The jury heard the evidence submitted and the argument of counsel. The court charged the jury as to its duty to determine the guilt or innocence of King, and the jury retired to consider the evidence, and upon returning to open court, the jury delivered its verdict. The court received the jury's verdict and ordered the verdict entered of record as not guilty. According to police documents, on October 20, 2021, Marquez told police she misplaced her card after buying food at the Subway inside Stripes, and the card had been used without her permission. Quote, "There were two unauthorized transactions on her card, one for $1.90 at Subway and one for $35.91 at Stripes," MPD Chief of Police Christopher Quintana said at the time. After reviewing the store's surveillance footage, officers identified King, who was an employee at Subway, as the suspect. King was arrested by Ward County Sheriff's deputies on October 25th and charged with two counts of credit or debit card abuse, a state jail felony. King was fired from Subway after her arrest. MEDC considers purchasing Main Street property to ease downtown parking troubles. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Meeting in regular session on Monday, the Monahans Economic Development Corporation Board discussed an option to purchase a dilapidated property located at 106 South Main Street. MEDC Director Ashley Adalto told the board, quote, "The property doesn't have a roof and the windows are boarded up, but the owners have recently listed the building for sale," end quote. The building is 8,000 square feet and the owner is asking $40,000. Purchasing the building to expand the downtown parking was discussed by the board in an earlier meeting. Quote, "I know we have talked about the downtown parking situation before, and with all the business in the area, the traffic has increased and parking is a problem," end quote. The building is directly north of the Golden Treasures thrift store, and board member Leticia Rodriguez asked if the buildings shared a wall. Quote, "That is the back end wall and would be the main concern going forward on the property, although it looks like there is two separate walls for the building and the Golden Treasures," Adalto said. Ward County Commissioner Eddie Nelms has agreed to look into the demolition of the building to see what all it would entail, Adalto told the board. Member and owner of a business in the area, Mary Elena Sines, said, quote, "Having a business downtown, this is something that has been discussed a lot, and with the efforts of trying to revamp downtown, there is no parking and we have had issues. Having a parking lot to assist local downtown businesses will be very beneficial and help with the potential growth," end quote. Due to the $40,000 asking price, Adalto suggested the board offer less than half of the asking price, and after some debate, the board agreed to consider the purchase if Adalto could secure a more reasonable price and if tearing down the building would not compromise the Golden Treasures building. In other business, the board approved an easement agreement with Car Wash 828. MEDC had been at odds with Car Wash 828 since October 2022 over the easement being sought, which is a small strip of the property owned by the car wash. The easement is necessary in order to connect new sewer lines for future commercial development into the established main sewer city line that is located on the car wash property. The easement issue began with a mistake which was made on the original survey for the car wash's land. The survey should have shown a 70-foot utility easement, but instead only showed a 30-foot easement. The two parties finally agreed to a shared easement in December, pending reviewing the easement documents. Adalto presented the easement documents to the board and said, quote, "City Attorney Justin Till had reviewed the forms and did not see any issues with the standard document," end quote. Once approved by Car Wash 828 legal team, MEDC can move forward with obtaining bids and construction plans. Adalto also presented the board a project update from the Retail Coach. The Retail Coach is a retail recruitment and development company in which MEDC signed a service agreement with in October at a cost of $36,500 for a 12-month agreement. Services of the recruitment company are analyzing the retail market in Monahans, determine retail opportunists, site marketing, identify retailers and developers for recruitment, marketing and branding, active rectification and ongoing recruitment and coaching. Based on the update presented, Freddy's Frozen Custard and Steak Burgers needs to select two locations for Odessa Midland first, but is very interested in Monahan's potentially later in 2024. Factory Connection is also very interested in Monahan's and has sent over an option to lease in town. Harbor Freight Tools is not interested in Monahan's due to market size, but may be if better lease space opportunities become available. United Supermarkets asked to be contacted again in February once the Kroger and Albertsons merger is complete. The group is conducting ongoing recruitment with Taco Bell and Bill Williams Tire Center and has listed other meeting targets as Albertsons Companies, Berkshire Grocery Company, I-Mart Express, Hibbett Sporting Goods, Maurice's Incorporated, Ollie's Bargain, McCoy's Building, and the UPS Store. The board was pleased with the report and acknowledged it. In regular business, the directors approved accounts payable totaling $30,000, which included $6,900 for payroll and salaries and $19,000 to Kelly Evans Construction for National Fitness Campaign Foundation construction. The financial report, reflecting a balance of $3.3 million in available funds as of December 31st, and minutes of the December 15th meeting were approved. At the end of the meeting, the board convened into executive session to discuss Adalto's evaluation, and after reconvening back into regular session, the board took no action. Directors present were Hal Upchurch, Richard Irwin, Leticia Rodriguez, and Mary Elena Sines, and Kathy Anthony. Commissioners approve 4% raise for District Court Administrator. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. The Ward County Commissioners met at 9:30 a.m. Monday morning at the Ward County Courthouse for a very brief Commissioners meeting. Following the flag pledges, invocation, and establishment of a quorum, the Commissioners gave their approval to setting Belinda Bell Armendariz's salary for the 2024 year. The order stated that the court would determine and order the salary of Armendariz, court administrator for the 143rd Judicial District of Texas, set at the total monthly rate of $6,021 effective January 1, 2024. The salary is to be paid by the respective counties making up the 143rd Judicial District of Texas, Ward, Reeves, and Loving counties. The county's percentage of the monthly salary to be paid will be based on their respective populations. The total monthly payments will be as follows. Loving County, population of 64, and will pay 0.3% of the total of $18.07 monthly. Reeves County, with a population of 14,748, will contribute a percentage of 55.7 for a total of $3,354.24 monthly, and Ward County, with a population of 11,644, will pay percentage of 44%, which amounts to $2,649.67 of the monthly $6,021 administrator salary. Fringe benefits allowed for the court administrator will be the same as all county employees receive. Armendariz's new salary is an increase of $231.61, which is 4%. In other matters, the commissioners also approved the continuation certificate for bonding for Billy Riley as the county fire marshal. In routine matters, the county bills approved to pay included Ward County payroll fund of $414,159, jail expenses for groceries totaling $8,400, state prisoner expenses for $32,600, Ward County golf course equipment leases totaled $45,061, district pettit jurors paid $3,930, emergency medical services undesignated for $40,600, hospital operating fund in the amount of $864,966, medical surgical renovation totaling $568,000, state court cost for $1,155, and adult probation for $20,650. Other regular business agenda items approved by the commissioners were the county and hospital budget amendments, officers' report, the treasurer's monthly report, the treasurer's quarterly investment report, and the previous meeting's minutes. Present for the Monday session were Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms, and Ward County Judge Greg Holly. Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez was not present at the meeting. The Commissioner's Court meets every second and fourth Monday, making the next Commissioner's meeting on Monday, February 12th at 9:30 a.m. at the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask a question or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. Retirement party held for Carrasco. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Longtime City of Monahans employee Luis Carrasco was honored on Tuesday afternoon with a retirement party inside the council chambers of City Hall. Carrasco recently announced his retirement after 25 years of service to the city and citizens of Monahans. Carrasco was joined by his wife Sandra, daughter Taylor, and mother Olivia Carrasco, along with approximately 40 friends and co-workers for the celebration. City Manager Rex Thee presented Carrasco with a plaque and thanked him for his dedication to the city and citizens. The crowd was treated to cake, punch, and other goodies. The celebration served as a precursor to the regularly scheduled council meeting. Once the crowd cleared, the meeting got underway, and after the group established a quorum, approved the minutes of the January 9th regular meeting, council members approved a resolution from the city code enforcement regarding 10 properties in violation of city code for either trash and weeds, items in the alleyway, and/or dangerous structures. Quote, "The properties have all been given a first notice and did not comply, so this will allow code enforcement to follow up with a final notice and possibly move forward with court action if needed," Thee said. Those reported to be still in violation are 108 West 19th Street, owned by Ward Hospitality Corporation, 516 West 13th Street, owned by Ruben Martinez, 521 West 13th Street, owned by Amalia Garcia, 803 North Carroll, owned by Estella Yvonne de los Santos, 1107 South Dwight, owned by Jesse and Nikki Baker, 315 West 6th Street, owned by Martin Muela and Carla Meza, 1613 South Betty, owned by Yates Cattle Family Limited, 307 South Kenneth, owned by Sandra Ann McNew, 1101 South Betty, owned by Teresa Marie Jackal, and 600 North Ava, owned by Jeffrey Eugene Stevenson. Once a second notice is issued, the property owner has 10 days to comply, or the case could be turned over to Monahans Municipal Court for further action. The remainder of the meeting entailed the council approving renewing the city's membership with Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, the Public Funds Investment Report quarter ending December 31st, and acknowledgement of the 2023 Annual Traffic Contact Report from the Monahans Police Department. In routine business, the December accounts payable were approved by the council, totaling $1,164,000. Aside from the usual expenses, such as payroll, insurance, and fuel, some other items on the list were a payment of $57,000 to Kelly Evans Construction for the slab and sidewalk for the fitness court, which is currently under construction on East 15th Street. BP Communications Company was paid $12,600 for new digital pagers for the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department. Premier Waterworks was paid $89,800 for water meter repairs. And Warren Catt was paid $90,620 for parts and labor transmission and dozer. The December monthly departmental reports and minutes were also approved by the City Council, which includes building permits, Municipal Court's monthly report, Animal Control Officer's report, and the report for the Roy Hurd Memorial Airport. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in this story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. The next City Council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, February 13th, in the Council Chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street. Brake check collision driver sentenced but won't serve time. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Pecos man who took Ward County Sheriff's deputies on a high-speed chase down Interstate 20 in a stolen vehicle and caused a crash after brake-checking a deputy in January 2022 has been sentenced to state jail after failing to meet the requirements of his probation. Reuben Leroy Holguin, age 20, was arrested January 23, 2022, and charged with theft of property greater than $2,500, but less than $30,000, a state jail felony, and evading arrest detention with vehicle, a third-degree felony. In August 2022, Holguin was sentenced to 5 years probation for the offense, but subsequently failed to meet the requirements of his probation. Holguin appeared in front of 143rd District Judge Mike Swanson and was adjudicated on the theft charge on January 16th. As part of the plea agreement, charges for the evading arrest were dismissed. Swanson ordered Holguin to serve 15 months confinement in the state jail division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. He was further ordered to pay a $500 fine, $393 in court costs, and $6,000 in restitution. He was also given credit for 470 days or 15.5 months time served. According to the indictment handed down on March 2, 2022, Holguin did take possession of a 2021 Nissan Sentra from owner Blanca Estella Carbajal without her consent. Holguin then proceeded to drive the stolen vehicle on Interstate 20 eastbound toward Monahans. At the time, Ward County Sheriff Ferran Valle said, quote, "Dispatch received information of a stolen vehicle on January 23rd around 8:46 p.m. out of Pecos, which was then spotted heading westbound on Interstate 20 near mile marker 73, end quote. After verifying the vehicle was stolen, the deputy activated his overhead lights and attempted to stop the vehicle near mile marker 71. Quote, "As the deputy was approaching the vehicle, the driver, identified as Holguin, fled at a high rate of speed continuing westbound on I-20, approaching speeds of 126 miles per hour, and a pursuit ensued, he said. Holguin then exited the interstate near mile marker 58 and pulled over on the north side service road with his lights off. Quote, the deputy gave Holguin verbal commands to exit, and he once again fled the scene at a high rate of speed with his lights off. As he approached the 55-mile marker, Holguin slammed on his brakes, which caused the deputy to hit the vehicle, Valle said. Holguin also had two female juvenile passengers in the vehicle. Quote, the occupants of the vehicle would not comply with the deputy's commands and would not open the door, so deputies made forcible entry by breaking the driver's side window, he added. Emergency medical services were called to the scene to check the welfare of all three occupants of the vehicle and the deputy involved in the crash. All three individuals were taken into custody, and deputies later learned Holguin was not related to the juveniles. They were released back into the custody of their parents. The deputy's patrol vehicle only suffered minor damage and was still drivable.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.